Two. This show is pre-recorded and furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasin. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Kerry Kasin.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervie, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And I'm here, finally, with my wonderful co-host, Kerry Kasin, who I haven't seen in a couple weeks.
I'm back.
You're back.
Yes.
How did it go?
It was great. Those liquid oxygen treatments are phenomenal. I just want everybody in them. Anybody who doesn't feel good, autoimmune diseases, Lyme disease, get in there because it literally healed me. So I can't say enough about them.
I wish I could do it, but I have to work. I'm sorry.
I know.
People are relying on me to go to court for them to win their cases.
I worked the entire time, but I don't have a job like you where I have to be in court.
I can't tell judges, excuse me, I have to leave. I got to go into an oxygen tank now.
Well, there's one in downtown. You just, right after.
Sorry.
Right after your court
date. I'm focused. I need to help people. That's my sole motivation.
Yes.
Kerry, I know you're really excited about this show.
Yeah.
Because you have something in common, I would say, with our guest, Rory Kennedy.
Well, I've seen a lot of her documentaries, and I think she's a pretty amazing woman.
And she's probably seen them, too. That's what you have in common. Well, you're from, I would say, music royalty. She's from political royalty.
True.
Both with well-known fathers. With you had an opportunity to spend a lot of years with your father. Unfortunately, she didn't, Robert Kennedy, but she does have her mother, Ethel Skakel. So want to talk about Rory Kennedy. It's an incredible story. She has been one of the most renowned, prolific documentary makers in America. She's an Academy Award nominated, Primetime Emmy Award winning director, producer. Her films have covered so many compelling areas. And I know, Kerry, that's why you get excited about this. Areas like poverty and political corruption, domestic abuse, drug addiction, human rights, and mental illness. She's made more than 40 highly acclaimed documentaries, and her films have appeared on HBO, PBS, National Geographic, Lifetime Television, A&E, Court TV, The Oxygen Network, and a host of other media outlets. She is a board of directors member of the Climate Emergency Fund, which we're going to talk a lot about today. As well, she's also governor of the Academy of Motion Pictures of Arts and Sciences. Rory Kennedy, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you. That was quite an introduction. It's great to be here with you all.
It's great
so good to have you.
It's funny because Kerry laughs. She says, I'm the king of introductions. I say more about people than they know about themselves.
He does. He really does his research. I've never had a co-host that he literally will do. He will bring up stuff on people that they said, how did you ever find that? That's not even on Google. So he's great at that. But it's so wonderful to have you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here with both of you.
And of course, we had an opportunity a few years back to talk to your brother, Robert Kennedy Jr. We talked to him about the Porter Ranch gas leak, and he was on with Aaron Brockovich. Mm-hmm. What a great show. He's so committed. It must be something in the Kennedy blood to be so committed to the causes, the making of the documentaries. You've had so many, The Ghosts of Abu Ghraib, which won a Primetime Emmy Award, Ethel, of course, about your mother, Sundance Film Festival, aired on HBO, Last Days in Vietnam. Other than your family, which I know you're very proud of, what project are you proud of most?
Well, I would say, it's a little like asking which child you like the most. there is something really special about all of the films that I've made. that make me feel deeply connected to them. But I would say the film about my mother, Ethel, is probably the one I'm certainly the most emotionally connected to. And I did, you know, Last Days in Vietnam, I think, was a really extraordinary kind of journey, and just sort of seeing how that film had an impact in its audience and effect, and really, I think, helping people to understand that history a little bit more deeply. And I think a lot of people thought they understood what had happened during the final days of the war. And actually, even people who were historians and had written about it felt like their eyes were really opened in watching that film. So I think there was something very powerful about the journey I went on with that film, that film brought me on.
I watched the Thank You, Mr. President, the Helen Thomas movie that you made. My dad would always talk about her. We're Lebanese, so she's Lebanese, and he would talk about her constantly. And I didn't know growing up, I mean, just the impact and who she was and what she did with her life. So thank you for that, because I actually watched it after my dad. I think it was after he passed. And I
2008, yeah, for but I saw HBO it. Documentary
It may have been right before. Yeah, it may have been right before, but I did see it later. I actually saw it later. Right. And then Bobby Fischer, Tony Sadie is in that. Anthony Sadie, who you interviewed. Do you remember him?
Yes, Anthony Sadie was in that film.
Yes, and that was one of my dad's dear friends. So I was watching this film, so going, great. This is amazing. You have quite an impressive amount of documentaries we've made. I've been doing one for the last 6.5 years. I literally just picked up a camera.
Wait a second. Rory does them every 6.5
she's
months.
She's amazing. No,
and you're doing them this 6 years?
It took 6.5 years because we've had to follow all these stories. I don't know how totally getting my point. How do you do so many? And if there is a story you need to follow, and it might take a year, 2 years, 3 years, some of these people that we're following, it's taken 6.5 years to come to the conclusion of their stories. How do you do this? How do you continue is it just your team that follows? How would that work?
Well, you know, the truth is that in my films, there really haven't been that kind of epic character unfolding of stories that take years to tell.
Okay.
So part of it is the kind of the conceit of the film and how it's conceptualized and how I imagine it playing itself out. And I generally, you know, make films that I feel like have a pretty clear beginning, middle, and an end.
Right.
Like a 3-act structure that I can get my head around and kind of tackle.
Sure.
Over the course of a select period of time. I think there's some amazing documentaries that have been told over years and years, and some of the greatest documentaries out there are told that way, and the commitment of the filmmakers to tell these stories and just dive into them for so long, and usually, you know, without funding and support and no promise of you know, completing. I certainly appreciate that journey that so many filmmakers go on.
But
generally speaking, I try to kind of think of three topics where it's a bit more contained.
Sure.
You talk about the journey. Now, for instance, with Last Days in Vietnam, nominated as Best Documentary Feature at the 87th Academy Awards. That's got to be gratifying. But isn't it true with all of the important, compelling issues that you deal with that maybe awards aren't as important as getting the story out there to the public?
Of course. You know, my focus is really just trying to make the best film possible and not worry about awards at all, because, you know, there are so many great films out there that don't get nominated and don't get the awards and are totally deserving. And so I don't know that it's always a meritocracy. And it's certainly not something to be the reason that we invest in the time and the energy to make these films. So I just try to make the best film possible. And, you know, if it happens to kind of get on that awards circuit, it's great and it's very gratifying. And I do think it's worth the investment sometimes because I do think it can elevate a film.
Right, exactly.
And expand its the awareness of the topic and the subject matter as well as its reach. And so I think there's benefits to it. But I don't, you know, I don't think anybody's in this business because they want to win an award.
And when you talk about being in the business, True. You've been in it for so long. Going back to the Brown University days, and I have a disclaimer to make here. I actually was classmates with your cousin, John Kennedy Jr. at Brown. He was in the Phi Psi fraternity, and I was one of the losers who actually lived in a place called Sears. I don't know if you remembered Sears. It was between... Between the Phi Delts and the Phi Psis.
Yes, and I remember that.
He was a really great guy. I mean, I didn't have a lot to do with him, but what I did, really great guy. And he had so many great relationships. One thing I remember is I knew some of his friends and people he hung out with. Wasn't that something that really got you going? When you talk about filmmaking, so many of your first films and your company, the Moxie Firecracker Films, were put together because of your friends from Brown.
Well, I love Brown, and Brown had a big impact on me in a really positive way. I'm actually scheduled to go back there next week because we're starting a new initiative, the John F. Kennedy Documentary and Social Impact Initiative.
Oh, wow. That's great.
I know. It's really great. So it's launching on Tuesday of next week. We're doing an event there, and we're bringing in a number of filmmakers, many of whom had films on the award circuit this year. And it's starting with the theme of democracy in peril. So we're showing a number of films that got some nice awards this year and great attention and kind of coincidentally are not perhaps capturing this day and age. We're focused on that theme. So I'm excited to return back there. But I certainly feel that Brown had definitely an impact on me becoming a documentary filmmaker. I never took any film classes, funnily enough, but I was a women's studies major at Brown, and I did my final paper on women and substance abuse and the difficulties that women have trying to get drug and alcohol treatment. Mm. And I was so pulled into this story and the story of the women who were facing these issues. And at that time, there was a lot of press about drug addict women having drug babies and crack moms having crack babies. But there wasn't any awareness of the fact that almost 9 out of 10 of these women had tried to get treatment but had been denied care because there were no programs for pregnant women at the time. So,
you know,
there was this sort of irony about the whole thing. And I just felt like there are all these policies being created and it has nothing to do with the women and the lives they're leading and what they want to do and how we can protect them. So I made a film about it called Women of Substance.
And I want to pick up on it. We have to take a quick break, but it's a really interesting subject because you studied women's studies at Brown a few years back. And I want to ask you after the break how you can compare what you were working with then to what's going on now, especially with Me Too movement and other. I know you've done a lot of great work with Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences to get women's films out there, especially this year in the documentary category. So we want to pick up on that, but we got to take a break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. We're back. And it's a little ironic, Carrie, that we're listening to Man in the Mirror. Just before the break, I teased women's studies and how the women's movement has changed over the years. We're talking to Rory Kennedy. And before we talk a little bit more about her studies at Brown and the documentary, the film festival at Brown and other areas of her filmmaking career, I love this quote from Rory, and I'm just going to read it. It says, I grew up without a father and with a sadness for sure, not having him or knowing him. I also grew up with a family who had a real sense of gratitude for the life we have and for all the extraordinary gifts. There wasn't a lot of tolerance for feeling like a victim or feeling sorry for yourself. Isn't that really something? I mean, you've been through a lot, Rory, and here you are with this attitude that you got from your family. How have you been able to overcome these kind of obstacles to have this kind of perspective?
Well, I think that I was surrounded by people who were very committed to helping others. And I do think that has been a gift that many members of our family have been given, which is to think about other people and not ourselves overly. And I think that was definitely the culture that I grew up in. So I think that, you know, it was not a environment where there were, where I was told particularly to do anything, you know, to give back or, you know, that kind of thing really didn't exist for me, or that I had to help other people or that I needed to do public service or, you know, there was never anything like that. There was never any kind of scripted sense of this is what your responsibility is in my life. The other people may have felt differently, but that was not something that I experienced. But that said, I was in a community surrounded by people who were really committing themselves to helping others. And I saw that and I was really inspired by that. And I think that it had an impact on me and you know, who I am. And when I spend my time making a documentary about the global AIDS crisis or right now on the global refugee crisis, or, you know, on mental illness or on people who are in prison, whatever it is, I love doing it. I feel so lucky to be able to do it. I feel honored to be able to tell these stories. And I've learned so much in meeting the people I've met. And they all feel like they're gifts to me and they're teachers to me. And I feel blessed by that experience and humbled by it. So I guess that's all to say that, however, I became the person I am, and I'm sure that would take some amount of time to unpack entirely, that I, you know, it comes to me, and the feeling is that it's very organic and genuine and authentic, that it's not something that's been forced upon me.
Now, before we get into your brown days and nowadays with the Me Too movement, I want to ask you, have you ever thought about running for office? Because there's so many things that you do and you create awareness about all these social topics. But being able to actually get in there politically and change things, have you ever thought about that?
I have not really considered that in any serious way.
You'd win.
Mostly.
I'm just going to, I mean, honestly. You'd win. I mean,
oh, you're with, so sweet.
With what you've done, what you know, your voice, your last name. I'm sure people have said this to you your whole life, but we need somebody in there that has this focus on the social issues and what's going on with this earth. I don't know. I'm sure this has been brought up to you several times.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I really love doing the work that I do, and I do feel in making the films that I make that they're able to reach such a large audience, and I do feel like they really have can have a pretty profound impact, and I love the process of doing it. So part of it is that I really love what I do, and then, you know, I think I'm, and certainly other members of my family, my nephew Joe is running for Senate right now in Massachusetts. He's up in the polls, looking good. But of course, he needs all the support he can get. My sister-in-law, Amy Kennedy, is running for office in Connecticut.
What about Jack Schlossberg?
Jack Schlossberg, he's thinking of running. So, you know, there's a lot of my cousin Teddy has been in office for many years. And, you know, and then there's been many other people who have been in office. So it's certainly something that I admire in people, their willingness to run for office and serve. I just think for me, at least for right now, my time feels best spent doing the work I'm doing.
It's interesting because you talk about it being inherent in you. It's part of you. And it reminds me of a comment that was made by your mother regarding President Obama when she said, he has the passion in his heart. He's not selling you. It's just him. And then you responded by saying, we American women included desperately need that kind of leader now. Not a president of a particular gender or specific race, but a president with a different vision, one who inspires a sense of hope. That's exactly what you're talking about, isn't it?
You do your research.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. But, I'm a lawyer.
I'm impressed. I think, yeah, I mean, you know, I think that there are people who really love running for office. And I think that you know, it takes all of these things take effort. So I think that, you know, whatever you do, you want to be passionate about it and you want to be good at it. And I really appreciate, you know, with the people who are very passionate about public service and being an elected official. And I couldn't have more respect for them. You know, I think all of us who are kind of pushing towards a better world, leaving our children a better world, trying to make the world a little bit more understanding and compassionate, fighting for this planet, fighting for Earth, fighting for the people who are struggling and suffering, that there's not a panacea. There's not one way to do it. I think there's, you know, there is running for office, and that we can't do it without public servants. We can't move the needle, but we also can't do it without people protesting in the streets. And we can't do it without people just showing kindness to their neighbor or their community, or taking in, you know, a struggling child or tutoring, you know. So I think each of us contributes, you know, if the intention is to make the world a better place, and that there isn't one way to do this. There's,
right.
You know, I love filmmaking, and I think it's a part of the pie, but it's not. It's meaningless if the people watching the films don't then take that information and do something
right.
with it.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And it's meaningless if the people who have money don't write checks to support these things, right? So all of these efforts together, I think, can change the world, right? But I don't think there's just a single path.
And I'm sitting here listening to this, and I'm going to ask you, how do you get people, like you show a film, you show one of your films, somebody becomes just very, you know, they're like, I'm going to do something about it, very impassioned, and they want to do something. How do you get them to write the check? How do you get them to say, hey, you know, this needs your support? This, is it just an automatic thing? I do a lot of work in anti-elder abuse, and I'm constantly, you know, state to state for legislation that curbs it. But trying to get somebody to really hear what you're saying and to say, okay, I believe in this. Here's a check to help you keep going, has been the hardest thing for me. And for anybody in this cause, especially with elder abuse, what do you have? Is there some formula? Do you show the film and people go, oh, I get it. Here you go.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's a formula for raising money. I'm doing it more now than I've ever done it, because I did start this climate emergency fund,
yes, yes.
Which you mentioned in the beginning of the show. And I started that this past July, because I had just, survived the Woolsey fires here in California, in yeah. Southern California.
Right.
And, but I had to pack up my house and get out of it within 10 minutes with my three kids and my, you know, three dogs and two goats in the car and my husband. And we were racing down the PCH with this huge bloom of smoke behind us, and you know, it's
wow.
so scary. And
I'm glad you took your animals, because I was there, and we had trailers, and we were rescuing animals that were left there. It was horrible.
Yeah, I know, it's very sad, the animals that are left, but you know, and the people, obviously, most importantly. But I think that I had just finished a documentary about NASA, which sort of took a turn to really be about what NASA has taught us about climate change, because as I was interviewing to do a film that really was showing the 60-year history of NASA for its anniversary, the scientists there said to me, please focus on what's happening on this planet, because it is not a question of if, it's a question of when.
Right.
And we are on a train wreck.
Yeah.
And, you know, as NASA scientists, they're not allowed to say that. But of course, I can. So I did. And I made a film that really captured the work that they've done for the last 60 years to help us understand what's happening with the carbon impact and the imprint that we are leaving on this earth, and what it's doing in warming the earth and leading to these extreme weather events, which is really the result of climate change. And 99% of scientists agree with this data, which is impossible to get 99% of anybody to agree with anything. So
when we come back, I want to ask you, why do you think people, for the most part, are ignoring this and don't seem to care? Why is there not a worry and an anxiety for that? You know, it's the coronavirus, it's this, it's that, whatever. Why? I mean, we are heading towards planetary destruction. Why are people not worried about that? Why aren't we in a state of emergency about that? I know we have to take a break.
Yeah, we do. And we're going to talk a little bit more after the break about the climate emergency fund, how people can get involved and act on what Carrie's talking about. We're talking to Rory Kennedy. She tweets at Rory Kennedy. And you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
AM 790 KABC. Talk Radio 790 KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. The latest Democratic presidential debate is underway. Former Vice President Joe Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders are squaring off at CNN studios in Washington, D.C. The debate was moved from Phoenix due to growing concerns about the coronavirus. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar says the American healthcare system is in a unique situation.
Any pandemic like this runs the risk of exceeding our healthcare system capacity. And we must acknowledge that. We will work to increase the supplies of personal protective equipment, of ventilators, of field medical unit hospitals that we can deploy. We have tremendous supplies, but we want to acquire more.
Azar credited Congress with passing a measure that gives them money so production can be ramped up. KABC SoCal weather, mostly cloudy this evening with a slight chance of showers, then a greater chance of rain after midnight with lows in the upper 40s to mid-50s. I'm Steve Cumming. We're on the News Watch 24-7 for you on AM 790 KABC.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a tremendous price war among the major term life companies. Rates have dropped dramatically in the past few years. For example, a man age 45 non-tobacco user, $1 million of coverage, $75 per month level rate for the next 10 years. Or a man age 50 non-tobacco can obtain $500,000 of coverage for a monthly premium of only $110 per month, guaranteed not to change for the next 20 years. That's right, level rate guaranteed not to change for the next 20 years. If you're a smoker, we have great rates available for you as well. At Termbusters, we specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. If you're looking for new or replacement term life insurance, call today for a quote at 1-800-569-5440. That's 1-800-569-5440. You're probably paying more than you should. Call Termbusters, 1-800-569-5440, or visit our website at termbusters.net. Remember, 1-800-569-5440. Rates and availability may vary by state. Sample rate quotes based on preferred non-tobacco underwriting. Exam required to qualify.
From the Reagan Library, shh, to the Nixon Library.
Get it right. AM 790 KABC.
I'll send an SOS to the world. I'll send an SOS to the world. I hope that someone.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Women hit that one. Yeah. SOS to the world. We're talking to Rory Kennedy, filmmaker Moxie Firecracker Films, and we've got a couple of dangling chads here for, I mean, we've got to follow up quickly. We've
yes.
only got another 10 minutes, and we need to get a couple quick, this is the rapid round, Rory, a couple things. So we want to pick up on what Carrie was saying before the break. We also want to talk about women's issues and how they compare, because we did talk about that last segment when you were at Brown, and what you've been doing for the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences. So let's start first with Karen's question.
I just don't understand why we have all these emergencies, and the media is covering these emergencies, what seem to be emergencies. But why isn't there an uproar about what's going on with the planet, about the pollution? I don't care when people say to me that they don't believe in, you know, global warming, that they don't believe in it because different things can cause, a volcano can cause more ash and damage to the ozone, this and this and this. I said, okay, let's say global warming isn't real. Let's say that. Why are you not looking at all the pollution in the oceans, what we're doing to the forests, what we're doing to the air? Okay, what's going on there?
I understand, and it is quite frustrating, but I think what's important for all of us to appreciate is that the fossil fuel industry is spending billions and billions of dollars in an anti-climate campaign, communicating to audiences in very targeted ways that climate change isn't real. So they are spreading that message. They're spreading it on Fox News. They're spreading it in social media. They are targeting very specific people, and they are giving them very targeted misinformation to make them feel that way.
And why, you know, are they not calling it something different,
Australia,
though?
Australia, for example.
Right.
The fires in Australia, which are clearly the result of climate change.
Right.
Right.
Murdoch owns the major newspapers in Australia, and they were spreading misinformation that the wildfires were started by green groups that were planting green plants, and that those were lighting on fire and were the source of the fires.
This is the thing. Why are they? Maybe we should scrap the name climate change. That's the problem, because the truth is, we're polluting and destroying. You can't argue with that. You can't argue that our oceans are being. Do you know who Sylvia Earle is? I got to speak with her, and we just what we're doing, the overfishing, the polluting, what we're doing to the oceans, we're doing ourselves in. That's just one thing. I mean, the fires, the air, why aren't we calling it what it is? We're polluting.
Well, I think that's a good point, too, that it is pollution, and we should remind people of that.
Yes.
But, you know, one of the things we're trying to do with the Climate Emergency Fund, which is a fund to support activists, and it's supporting people getting into the streets, causing a little bit of disruption.
Right.
And the reason for that is, if you look at the history of the United States, when you've seen real change happen in this country, it's always been predated by people getting into the streets, the civil rights movement, the women's rights movement, the disability movement, the gay rights movement, et cetera. So the idea is to really support these activists and to create a fund where we vet them all, and then you can give this fund money, and then it goes directly into the hands of, you know, these young folks who are getting into the streets, who are organizing, and who are really pressuring our policymakers to do the right thing. And we're seeing real impact in that effort of corporations kind of changing their direction. And I think you're seeing, you know, the governments changing, declaring climate states of emergencies, and really creating a commitment to getting off of our dependence of fossil fuel.
And last year, Rory, you co-authored a great Rolling Stone opinion with Red Hot Chili Peppers singer Anthony Kiedis and the Malibu Foundation's Trevor Nielsen on the current climate crisis, something that is really worth a read. It's something that explains a lot, I think, about what you're talking about. How do people get involved in the Climate Emergency Fund if they wish to do so?
Well, thank you for asking. I mean, as I say, as the name suggests, it is a fund. So we really think of our funders as activists, And not all of us can, you know, have the wherewithal to get in the streets or to get arrested or to do the protest. But funders can support those people by writing a check to the Climate Emergency Fund. So I recommend people go to our website. And, you know, we don't do the work ourselves, so we're really a pass-through. So what we do is we vet all of these groups, whether it's Extinction Rebellion or Jane Fonda and Fire Drill Fridays, or groups that are organizing universities to disinvest from fossil fuels is another example. We support, you know, moms who are trying to get out the vote on climate change in swing states across the country. So it's kind of a whole range and spectrum, but we are on the front lines of that effort. So if you're thinking, what can I do? The world's falling apart. I don't know what to do. You can go to Climate Emergency Fund and write a check, and I can guarantee you it will get into the hands of the people who are doing amazing work, and we're helping them create infrastructure and really boosting their ability to spread their message and to really have impact in a much more meaningful way than they would. Since July we started, we've raised almost $3 million.
Wow. Congratulations.
Directly into the hands of these activists. Yeah. So you're hearing from them and you're seeing them a little bit more because of this money that is allowing them to really elevate their messaging and their actions.
You know, you've had such a great impact, and you can see that it translates into action when people are giving, people are more conscious of the issues. Getting back to your women's studies class at Brown University when you were in college, I don't forget anything. Compare what you were talking about back at Brown to what you were dealing with and have been dealing with, for instance, with the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences, for the Academy Awards, getting women involved, the Me Too movement, all of that stuff. How does it compare to what you were studying back at Brown?
Well, I think it's all been informed, you know, by what I studied at Brown and what I learned at Brown and the people who influenced me at Brown. And I continue to have a lot of relationships, ongoing relationships with fellow students who are among my best friends still. And certainly, you know, the training that I had there and my analysis and understanding how the world works and has influenced me through today. And, it's been my great honor to be on the board of the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences. And I think being in that position and working with fellow board members and the staff and the CEO there, Dawn Hudson, who's amazing, David Rubin, who's our president, and so many others who are really committed and really like great, decent people who are really committed to inclusivity and to making sure that our industry is really working hard to represent the greatest number of people. And I think that the idea really, you know, is not to be inclusive just to be inclusive, but by being inclusive, you expand the range of voices, of perspectives. We all understand the world a little bit deeper by exposing ourselves to people who don't have the same background as we do. You know, NASA, for example, having just made this film, is fully committed to that, not because they want to, you know, reach some numbers and say we're diverse. It's because NASA works better when they have people who come from all sorts of different perspectives. And certainly the arts has always celebrated that. And we are committed to continuing that tradition. So it's been exciting to, you know, support those efforts and be amongst a team who's really committed to that.
Makes a lot of sense. Before we let you go, Rory, just want to ask you quickly about the Boeing 737 project with Imagine Documentaries, teaming up with Brian Grazer, Ron Howard, and of course your husband, Mark Bailey. What can we look for from that project?
Well, that project is just getting off the ground, as they say, but I'm very excited about it. We're going to look at what happened inside Boeing that led to these two crashes, and tell the story, hopefully, from the inside out. I think what will be really a compelling film that will get out in the world, not for a little while, but I'm excited to come back on your show once it's out and tell you a little bit more about it at that point.
We'd love to hear about it. It's a fascinating subject and something that I think is important moving forward.
Yes. And we'd love to have you in the studio. It'd be fantastic.
Thank you all for having me. It's been great.
Really appreciate it. Thanks for the time, Rory. That's Rory Kennedy. She tweets at Rory Kennedy. The film company is moxiefirecracker.com. Rory, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
You all take care.
Okay,
all right,
too.
We got to take a break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposures, cancers, and death. RGW lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner. If you're suffering from a work-related injury, Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now, 855-4-RGW-LAW, 855-4-RGW-LAW, or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Thanks for calling Consolidated Credit Counseling Services. Can I help you?
I sure hope so. I'm in debt.
Is it credit card bills?
Yes, I have two credit cards that I'm making minimum payments on and another that I'm behind on. I owe about $5,000.
What interest rates are you paying?
Between 18 and 22%.
At that rate, it'll take over 20 years to pay off.
Wow, 20 years?
What Consolidated Credit can do is work with your creditors to lower your payments and reduce or even eliminate your interest charges. You should be able to pay everything off in 3 or 4 years.
What do I have to do?
Just give me some details and get ready to celebrate your freedom from debt.
We're Consolidated Credit. We're here to give you freedom from debt. Call now for your free consultation.
If I had known it was this easy, I would have called years ago.
Call 800-552-6750. That's 800-552-6750. 800-552-6750.
Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunlight Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company, licensed by New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM19, Oregon DM80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission, license number DC32.
If you love Ben Shapiro, which you do.
I love you, man.
You'll love Andrew Klavan. The Andrew Klavan Show. Weeknights at 9 on AM 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back. Carrie and I are a little blown away right now. I don't have any energy left. What about you?
She's amazing, Rory Kennedy. What a powerhouse. You know, I just have to say to Democrats, to Republicans, to people who don't believe, you know, whether you believe that there's global warming and there's climate change, I don't care. That's to me, that's not the point. I think that there's a disconnect here. We're destroying the earth, period. We're putting pollutants into the air. You know, China can hardly breathe if you ever go there. I've been there. The air pollution is thick.
I hope you haven't been there lately.
I was there not that long ago. Not before. It was before
really?
The coronavirus.
I'm
it was before this coronavirus.
Right now.
Yeah. So, you know, the island of trash that's floating in the ocean that's bigger than Texas. The fact that, you know, we are eating GMO foods and polluting the ground.
Why are you so shocked? Why do you feel like you're frustrated? Don't you know what makes the world go round?
Money. And that's the problem with the fossil fuel and these massive zillion dollar companies that are putting misinformation out that we're not doing anything wrong with the earth. And look,
people have to make money off everything.
But we are going to burn up and die.
Don't care. People don't care. They're on this earth for a fixed period of time, and they want the most money they can during that period of time while they're on this earth. So that's why when you talk about someone like Rory Kennedy, who I think genuinely has dedicated her life to helping people, and she doesn't have to, obviously. I'm sure there's enough money for her to just sit in Malibu and sit on a beautiful chair and on the beach and, you know, do whatever. But she works her butt off for these causes, and you have to give credit to them, the Kennedys and whoever else is working with her, because they don't have to do it.
Right. And I look, you know, I'm independent. I sometimes vote Republican. I sometimes vote Democrat. There just depends on who it is, because I think that's the sane way to look at things. You know, I think it's very, and unfortunately, you have so many people that have no common sense nowadays. So fiscally, I'm on the right, right? And with the social, you know, the, some of these, the social issues, I'm on the left. We need to come together and meet in the middle here, because fighting and screaming at each other and Fox and CNN making profits on tearing the nation apart is not doing anything to help any of us. And when I'm
why don't you run for office
as an independent? I can never make it. So
You know what the problem is, and it's interesting you bring it up, and I happen to agree with you. If you put yourself in a category such as a Democrat or a Republican, mm-hmm. not an independent, you don't really have the freedom to have different views on different issues.
That's right.
Because your party has a party line, even if you don't agree with it. You may really believe in social welfare programs, for instance, but not in something else that is part of the party platform.
That's right.
But you can't voice it.
And the Democrats that I've seen working up at the Capitol when I was trying to push my bills through, that did go against their parties, that did say, no, this doesn't make sense to me, they're out of a job. They're not in office anymore. Their own party pushed them out. When you try and go against it, it's sickening. It's disgusting. Money. It's about tearing the country apart. It's about getting people upset with each other. It's about left and right. It's not about common sense. And that's what we need to get back to.
But let me play devil's advocate. How would people vote for one person or the other if they weren't affiliated with a party and there were issues that you don't know how they were going to vote? For instance, someone who may be a Republican but be against abortion, guns, but other policies they believe in.
Well, let me tell you something. The media is not giving any time to those who have, split views, who might vote on, you know, having women's rights and abortion, but may fiscally believe that, you know, we shouldn't, you know, tax the rich at 90%. Like, you don't hear from them. You know, we're not supposed to be. We're a republic. We're a democracy that was not based on a two-party system. But once again, what's it come down to? Money and control and power. So the people that have the common sense that could bring this nation together are forced out or unable to get any kind of platform because the media won't give it to them. It's not good ratings for CNN and Fox to have people down the middle making sense. No, no way.
Rory mentioned Jack Schlossberg.
Yes.
So he's the grandson of John F. Kennedy. Have you seen him?
No, I haven't.
Here. And she said, we got a little tidbit of information that no one knows. I'm just saying that. On Gervie's Law, right here on Gervie's Law, about Jack Schlossberg. I can't say his name. He should have just used the Kennedy name, but he married a Schlossberg.
So he took that name?
Well, he should. What's he going to? he is the grandson of Jack Kennedy. And she said he is considering running.
Mm-hmm.
27 years old, I think. Here's a picture of him.
Okay.
I'd vote for him just by looking at him.
You're hilarious.
I'm not that funny.
Yeah, he's a good looking guy.
Look at that Kennedy hair.
Yeah, no, it's he. You can see JFK Jr. in him. That's
absolutely
crazy.
The grandson of JFK, and not Jr. You can see Jr. in there too.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, JFK Jr. didn't have kids because he had just gotten married before he died. Yeah. But it's Carolyn's, John F. Kennedy Jr.'s sister's child.
Kid, yeah.
But he's still a grandson of Jack.
In this article that you showed me, it says one of the paragraphs above it says more than just a hunk. In May of 2000, goes on to talk about him. But yeah, he's
you know, we were talking about John Kennedy Jr. too, and I know when I was at school with him at Brown, we really believed that he was going to be the president of the United States.
Yeah.
Not only did he have the name, but he had the charm, and he was a good guy. He was down to earth. He used to ride his bike everywhere. Just really decent guy. Would have been something that this country could really use.
A lot of people believe that. A lot of people believed he was going to be the next president.
Yeah. Well, maybe his nephew, Schlossberg, President Schlossberg. Can't really say that well, but
it's a little hard. But, you know, hey, look, who knows? You never know. But
you're looking at him like you're really intrigued.
No, I'm looking at the article here.
Oh, I thought
I'm looking
you,
at the article. Yeah. No.
But that's a little piece of news that we got from Rory Kennedy today.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I mean, when you have a Kennedy name and you've got that, you know, that pedigree.
Yeah.
And people are going to look whether or not you win. People will. You're going to have the attention.
And wouldn't it be nice to have someone half the age of a guy like Biden or Sanders?
Look, I Biden Sanders, it's not even the age that worries me. It's just certain points of view. And it doesn't mean I disagree with them completely, but there are some platforms I look and I
but I'm
say,
just telling you people.
What?
I'm getting older. I'm not close to their age, but you get a little more tired. You get a little more frustrated. You're not thinking as clearly. Why can't we have someone running this country who's just, you know, at the top of his game?
Like JFK.
Not on the way down.
Right? Like JFK.
I think there should be a rule, and I'm not trying to be discriminatory against age, but I think there should be a rule that presidents must be within a wheelhouse of 45 to 65 years old. Sorry, that's it.
Come on. People are living. I mean, look. I
don't care how long they're living.
Maybe
I want people at the top of their game.
Maybe 75.
With energy. We got to go. What a great show. Thanks for being here, Carrie.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
I'd love to have you. This is Gurry's Line. We'll see you again next week.
This show is pre-recorded and furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.